listening to Plug Into Health with Prevea Health, exploring healthcare topics that matter to you, the latest developments in health and medicine, and the inspiring stories that emerge from Prevea Health, our partners, and the communities we serve. The following episode was recorded prior to the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. To learn more about caring for a loved one affected by dementia amidst the pandemic, please consult your loved one's doctor. You can also visit cdc.gov to learn more about caring for and protecting older adults who may be at a higher risk for COVID-19. Welcome. I am your host, Angela Dea. This year, during Super Bowl 54, Google featured an ad called Loretta, which sparked a heartfelt, emotional response from the millions who were tuned in. The ad portrays an elderly man with a failing memory using a Google program to help him remember all of the things he loved about his late wife, Loretta. In one instance, he commands the system to remember that Loretta always snorted when she laughed. It is heartwarming and heart-wrenching all at once, and anyone watching can easily see their mom, dad, grandparents, or even themselves in this man's situation. Unfortunately, there are millions of people who, just like the elderly man in that commercial, struggle with memory loss, a condition related to dementia and the most common type of dementia, Alzheimer's disease. According to the Alzheimer's Association, 1 in 10 people age 65 and older in the U.S. have Alzheimer's, and that number will escalate rapidly in the coming years as the population of Americans age 65 and older is projected to grow from 55 million in 2019 to 88 million by 2050. As the number of those diagnosed with Alzheimer's or other dementias grows, so will the number of those caring for loved ones affected by the disease. Those caregivers are the focus of this episode of Plug Into Health. Our guest today is Katie Dykes, a nurse practitioner specializing in geriatrics at Prevea Health. She evaluates and treats dementia and assists family caregivers of those affected by dementia. Katie is also an active member of the local, state, and national Alzheimer's Association. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you.
How long have you been in this line of work?
Oh, over 25 years.
Wow. So you're going to have some great insight for us today. Thank you so much for joining us. Can you explain what is dementia and who is most commonly affected by it?
Well, dementia is really a general term for a disease of the brain, which is characterized by memory loss, by inability to do planning, problems with vocabulary or language, and they start out in early stages and progress through early, middle, and late stages. But dementia is like an umbrella or general term, very much like cancer or heart disease. And then there are many different types of dementia underneath that general heading. And some of them would be, as you mentioned, Alzheimer's disease, which is the most common form of dementia. But other types would be Lewy body disease, such as they speculate Robin Williams may have had, frontotemporal dementia or Pick's disease, which affects a different area of the brain. There are dementias that are associated in the later stages of Parkinson's disease and MS. There's vascular dementia, which is caused primarily by stroke or cardiovascular diseases, where parts of the brain do not get a good brain supply due to a blockage or a bleed in the brain, if you have a head injury, for example. Mm-hmm. And a brain bleed, then you would have problems with that part of the brain as well. So dementia is a general term, and then Alzheimer's disease is one of the most common types of dementia.
I think when most people think dementia or Alzheimer's disease, they associate an elderly person, someone who is aging. Is that the most common type of person that dementia or Alzheimer's disease affects?
Yeah, it is. The greatest risk factor for developing dementia is advanced age. So yes, the older you get, the more likely you are to have dementia or Alzheimer's disease. When you get to age 85, it's about a 50-50% of the population in that age group and higher that have dementia. But younger people can also get it. And usually the younger you have it, the onset occurs, the more likely you are to have a more rapid progression of the illness.
What are the signs that your loved one may be suffering from dementia and in need of professional help?
Well, there are 10 warning signs, and usually people develop these. These are what we call the early stages of the disease. So you develop problems with short-term memory primarily because Alzheimer's disease develops in the hippocampus, or the area of the brain that affects your short-term memory initially. So people that are forgetful, they misplace things. People forget what they were talking about and restart a conversation. People ask the same questions repeatedly, or they tell you a story, the same story over and over again. They forget appointments, things like that. Those are the areas of short-term memory, or maybe they don't take their medications properly. That's one of the things we see in the clinic. It's the patient who, when you adjust their insulin dose or their blood thinner dose, they just don't seem to do it correctly. The results aren't what you expect when they are supposed to do that. Or the patient that calls in repeatedly asking, when is my next appointment? What time was that again? People that take frequent notes, but they're on all little scraps of paper that they misplace. So short-term memory loss is the first sign of Alzheimer's typically. And then there are also some other signs, like I said, like misplacing things, not being able to use language properly, that every other word is whatchamacallit or thingy, and very common things like your wristwatch or a cat or a dog or a vehicle like a car. They can't think of the word for what they're trying to talk about. That's another very common sign. Inability to plan or organize something, like if you're having people over for dinner, you cannot get the correct groceries, you don't follow the recipes correctly. That situation, if you have confusion with time or place, you're showing up at the wrong time or on the wrong day for certain events, like your church services, you're coming on the wrong day. If you're going to a party at someone's house, you get the wrong date or the wrong time, and then you have to go back at a different time. Trouble understanding visual-spatial relationships, that does develop as well. Your handwriting may change. When you're driving, you aren't able to space yourself from a vehicle in front or behind you, and you have little fender benders or dings in the parking lot. But that's another type of a thing. Or if you are trying to sit down in a chair and you miss it, it does affect your visual spatial skills in the early stages in very mild situations like that. A lot of people think that if they have a senior moment and forget their friend's name, or if one time they lose their car in the parking lot, they think they're getting Alzheimer's disease. But typically it's something that affects your daily life. So there has to be a larger problem than just a once-a-month kind of a thing. But it's typically a stage in the early stages where family members or the patient themselves does not really recognize it or does not want people to recognize it. They try to hide it. And so it's very difficult to get a person to admit that they're having problems and to talk to somebody about it, because they know that their independence is going to be affected eventually, and they don't want that to happen.
It sounds like, a lot of the examples you provided, I'm just imagining, somebody who, maybe noticing these things, in their aging parents. And it sounds like these are things that could, take a while to notice over time. You might just chalk it up to, aging, or this happened once and this happened again. Does it matter? Do you need to get them in sooner rather than later? Does that make a big difference in getting them help?
It does make a big difference. If you maintain, even if you don't live in the same city, if you talk to your parent on the phone, or you can kind of get an idea of what's going on if they start repeating themselves on the phone frequently, or they call you the next day and you start talking about the exact same things they don't remember talking to you the day before, then you kind of have to recognize that there is a problem. Probably they're not taking their meds correctly. Maybe they're not paying their bills on time. And that can be a very dangerous thing, even though they can still function pretty much on their own, such as getting dressed or changing clothes or eating. They might be forgetting to pay insurance bills and lose their life insurance, for example, or they might not be taking medications properly and end up in the emergency room with a very serious problem because they didn't take the medications they were prescribed correctly. So as soon as you recognize the problem early on, it's a good thing to have the person tested at a center that's recognized by In Wisconsin, we have the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute in Madison and many affiliated clinics throughout the state. And you can find your nearest clinic by contacting the center directly or by calling your local Alzheimer's Association. And they can steer you into a place that affects, they do testing with the person themselves and give you a diagnosis. And also working with the caregiver. They meet separately with the caregiver and give them some guidance on what their next steps should be. So it's beneficial to both the caregiver and the patient to get in early so they can start planning for the remainder of that person's life.
I want to talk more about the caregivers. I think, you know, the most common people who've likely clicked play on this episode may be a caregiver now. They know somebody who is a caregiver, or they know that they likely will be the caregiver in the near future. What does the role of family caregiver for someone with dementia mostly look like today?
It's usually a person that has a parent in their 60s or older. They may be an only child, which puts the onus totally on that one person, or it can be one with multiple children, and that can also create problems because each child might have a different idea of what's best for their mother or their father. But it is good for the caregiver. That most of the caregivers don't really know what Alzheimer's is unless they've had any previous experience with it with another family member. So it's very important for them to get educated on what dementia and Alzheimer's disease are, and also to understand what community supports are out there for them and take advantage of them early on.
Let's talk a little bit about some of those resources available for somebody who is, you know, just now navigating this journey. What are some good resources?
Well, I always tell them to start with the Alzheimer's Association, because even if you don't talk to anyone directly in person, you can look at their website, which is alz.org. And you could spend hours on there. They have resources online they explain what caregiving is all about and resources for caregivers. They explain the different types of dementia. They explain how to get involved in clinical trials if you're interested in that. They explain how you can volunteer. They tell you about local resources such as memory cafes, support groups, things like that. They offer training for businesses that want to be dementia-friendly. That's called the Purple Angel Program. And then if you really are truly interested, if you need help on a regular basis, if you're a direct caregiver 24/7 or even fewer hours than that, they have a 24-hour helpline as well.
You also, as part of your role here at Purveya, you assist family caregivers. Can you explain a little bit more about what that role entails?
Mm-hmm. It's typically steering them and listening to what their issues or concerns are and giving them a little education and help as to what they can do to whatever their concern is. But I also refer them to the Alzheimer's Association or other community support systems so that 24/7 they do have the support they need while they're caregiving.
What are some of the most common challenges you see caregivers face in directly caring for their loved ones with dementia? For example, are there aspects of the disease that make it particularly challenging for caregivers?
Yeah, there are different stages of Alzheimer's. I think the early stage is pretty much the early warning signs we talked about. The person can still be fairly independent and they know a lot about what's already going on, and they might resist help from their loved one, and that's the most difficult challenge is to work with your loved one and say, you know, Mom, you really shouldn't drive anymore. We're getting concerned about that. Or we think that maybe I should help you set up your medications or go to your doctor appointments with you. So things like that are challenges in the early stages. And when you get more to the middle and late stages, the person really needs 24-hour supervision. Then you have to either consider whether you're able to give that yourself, whether family members can share the 24-hour care, or whether you need to look for outside resources to assist you to some degree. That can be anything from getting a few hours of help a week from an agency, coming into your home. It can be adult day programming that's available in our community. It can be having someone move to an assisted living facility that's memory specific, that offers memory care. And when you get to the very late stages where total care is required, where the person can no longer speak or dress themselves or go to the restroom on their own or bathe themselves, they sometimes need to be fed, then they pretty much are ready to move to a skilled nursing facility.
Let's go back to that earlier stage challenge you talked about, maybe convincing mom or dad or grandparent that you shouldn't be driving anymore, or we have to remember to take this medication, or et cetera. How do you help someone navigate those earlier stage challenges?
Mm-hmm. It's a good question, because driving is probably the biggest obstacle. People don't want to give up their car keys or their independence. And we do tell people to kind of go, if the person themselves doesn't recognize that they're not a safe driver any longer, you can report them to the Motor Vehicle Department in Wisconsin, and they will not disclose who reported them. So you can do so anonymously. They will send a letter directly to the person and say that you cannot drive any longer until you return the following form that's filled out by your physician. And you have to make an appointment and go schedule an appointment with your provider. They fill out the form. Sometimes they'll recommend retesting at the end of the form. Then the person would have to also be retested for driving. And then the Motor Vehicle Department would be the physician or the provider cannot take a person's license away, only the Department of Transportation or licensing.
So that takes some of the responsibility then off of maybe the caregiver, et cetera, too.
Correct.
And
people don't really know that they can report anonymously. I think that's an obstacle.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people would know that. Thank you for sharing that. What about just even the challenge of seeing someone that you love, who you've spent your lifetime with, going through something so difficult, and maybe at times and stages of the disease, not even knowing who you are?
Mm-hmm. It is a very difficult disease. It is a terminal illness if it runs its full course. Like, usually when people are diagnosed in the early stages, they have an 8 to 10 year life expectancy, but it does vary from person to person. Some people can live much longer, but it is a difficult journey for the caregiver, especially because the person with the illness doesn't necessarily realize what's going on at a certain point. But the caregiver does need a lot of support. That's when I recommend support groups, where they can speak with other people who are in the same situation. And the support groups can be educational as well as supportive, emotionally supportive for the person.
And I would imagine, it affects other parts of a caregiver's life as well. Maybe even they're struggling with maintaining other relationships in their lives. It might be affecting their jobs, other aspects of their lives.
It does, yep. The Alzheimer's caregiver is really a 24-hour-a-day job when you finally get to a certain point in the middle stages, where the person cannot be left unsupervised. So if you are a working person, you need to find respite care while you're at work. If you have your own children, you have to find people to help you out. You can't always bring your parent or your loved one with you. It's always a challenge, and there are good resources in our community in Brown County. We have a good adult day programming situations. We have in-home caregivers that can come in and help somebody, you know, stay with a loved one while you go out and work or do errands. So it's knowing the resources and calling your Alzheimer's Association or getting information at your support group as to what's out there to help you.
As somebody who's been in this for 25 years, you're recommending tap into those resources that we have in our community. Do you think we have enough resources?
Well, I would say compared to other places in the country, yes, Wisconsin itself is very far ahead. We have an excellent network of diagnostic clinics that we are the envy of other states.
Is there anything that someone or entire families can be doing now to prepare for the potential of caring for mom, dad, or another family member affected by dementia in the future? So maybe mom, dad, grandparent, loved one is okay now, but maybe somebody wants to get a jump start on preparing for what the future may bring. What can we be doing?
Well, what I always tell people is to make sure they have long-term care insurance if they can afford it and buy that, because it gives you choices. Medicare does not pay for nursing home care. It doesn't pay for assisted living. It doesn't pay for in-home services unless you have a skilled service that's needed. And this is primarily custodial care. So I would tell people to get long-term care insurance before they have a diagnosis that prohibits them from getting it. Another thing I tell people is to make sure they have an advance directive in place, their power of attorney for healthcare, and make sure it's kept up to date. Because once you are diagnosed with dementia or you're incapacitated, you cannot develop that form, you can't develop the document any longer, and nor can you change who you have on the form. So if you do have that, make sure it's updated at all times. Like if your spouse dies, make sure if they were their primary agent you had on there that you move someone else into that spot by updating the forms. I would also say that people should talk to their mom or dad while they're still living. Like, what would you want to see happen if you developed Alzheimer's? Like, would you mind if we put you in an assisted living? Is there a certain one that you like? Or would you rather be living with a family member? Find out what their preference might be and talk about it as a family if that's possible or not.
Very good tips there. You know, in this discussion, I want to make sure that we remember the person, you know, who's actually diagnosed with dementia. They must be struggling deeply as well. What do we know about what a patient with dementia is experiencing? Do they know? Do they understand what is happening?
Especially in the early stages, they do. And they know that their memory is poor. They know it's slipping. They're afraid to let other people recognize that. So they might withdraw from social activities, or if they do go out, they don't converse as readily because they don't want to get caught in a mistake. They might turn down invitations from people and become more socially isolated. So they do recognize that. And every so often they'll have a break, even in the later stages where they seem like they really don't know what's going on. They might have one moment that they're totally lucid and come out with something like right on, because I can remember one lady, she was going up and down the hall at a nursing home in her wheelchair, like, what can I do? What can I do? And she couldn't really, nobody could get through to her. And I asked her, I said, I don't remember what her name was. I said, can you help me with my Christmas cards? I don't have them addressed yet. And she looked at me and she said, you should have had those done a long time ago. So I don't know if they really knew what was going on, but sometimes they come out with something just totally right on and you don't expect it. So
how important is it for somebody, whether it's the family caregiver or a family member or loved one, to maybe, you know, really understand what someone with dementia is experiencing?
Yeah, that's why it's helpful to go to the support groups and get educated through the Alzheimer's Association, because they will tell you the very common, they call them challenging behaviors is what they're referred to. It's really these people that want to go shopping for a bathing suit and like at midnight or something, and they're not going to say take no for an answer, and they want to leave the house, or you wake up during the night and they're not in their bed and the door is open and you think, well, where did they go? Or they go for a walk in the neighborhood and they're sitting there going around the block and 2 hours later they're not back yet, or the car is gone, you don't know where they went, and you hear every so often the silver alerts where people are missing for days on end, and finally somebody recognizes them in a quick trip or something and calls the police. It's very difficult to know what's going through their mind. You just have to kind of, you don't argue with them because you'll never win, but you have to kind of put yourself in their place, and you recognize the emotion that they're expressing more than what the actual scenario is that they're saying to you.
Could you give us an example of that?
Yep. So if they're saying, oh, I have to go home, I have to get home, and they are home, just say, well, you must be hungry. Are you hungry? Are you having to get home to eat, make dinner? Or, try to figure out what their need is. Sometimes it's they have to go to the bathroom. Sometimes they're tired and they want to lay down. They want to just go home and rest on their bed. That's why they're saying they want to go home. You'd have to figure out what their discomfort is.
Mm, okay. Do you find that some people who may not be necessarily aware of dementia and how it works and what the person is experiencing, do you find that some people do tend to become argumentative with their loved one who is suffering and not realizing that that's not helping the situation?
Yeah, they do. If you don't have good education, and there are good dementia specialist training programs offered by the Alzheimer's Association for both professional caregivers and for family caregivers. And these are great classes to go through so that you don't end up escalating a situation where the person says, no, I won't go with you. And then you have to figure out, well, how can I get them with, if you argue with them and start pulling on them, and they're just going to mirror your anxiety and escalate their behavior. So
these classes that you're mentioning, is that something you can find out more information about on the Alzheimer's Association website or
yes.
other resources you've mentioned?
Yes, exactly.
I've also heard that caring for someone with dementia and Alzheimer's can be incredibly rewarding. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think there's some value in knowing that your loved one is with you and that they do recognize their familiar environment. They have grandchildren around. They're part of the family. And the family themselves still has their loved one near them. And no matter what the situation, I think that makes people feel a little more, I don't know, like they've done all they can for the person. Some people feel terribly guilty when they can't do that. And it's not always their fault. They have to maintain a job if they're the only breadwinner in the family or whatever the case may be. They can't afford to quit their job, and they feel extremely guilty about using community services. But there's a good blend that you can put together and still get the rewards yourself of taking care of your loved one and being a friend and a family member to them rather than just a caregiver too. So people shouldn't feel bad about using community resources to help them out.
You've been in this line of work for 25 years. Somebody who may be listening and they're in the thick of this, or know they will be soon, they might be feeling really overwhelmed or anxious. What are your words to them?
I would say get hooked up with your Alzheimer's Association. Call up and find out what the community resources are that you can take advantage of. The memory cafes are great to find out information. The memory cafes, if people don't know what they are, they're a once a month meeting, usually at the Botanical Gardens or some other place in the area that offers a monthly meeting. And it's usually for caregivers and their the family member that's affected with dementia. And they attend together with other family members who bring their loved ones with dementia. And you get to be a little cohesive support group, but they usually do an activity together or celebrate a holiday that's close to the date that they're meeting, or watch a movie or sing songs or do a craft. It's a group that does something different every month, and it's a good way for people to network and have a cup of coffee or tea and just converse with other people. Say what you're experiencing. Did anyone else have this happen to them? What it helped you guys out? It's a very good resource. It's a casual setting. They're free. very nice setting to go to. And then you can also go to a support group, which is typically just for the caregivers, but some of them do offer respite care for the loved one during the session that the caregiver attends. But those two can be educational and offer a lot of good advice to people. Woodside Nursing Home has one. The DePere Community Center has one. There are some churches that offer them.
Katie, thank you so much for joining us today. Is there anything else you want to add or feel that I didn't ask you that you think would be relevant to this discussion?
I think just so people are not afraid to ask for help.
Don't be afraid to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's a great tip and a great way to end this. Thank you, Katie, for your time and expertise on this episode of Plug Into Health. And thank you to our listeners. And for caregivers who are interested in learning about more resources about their own health and well-being, I encourage you to visit Prevea.com, click on the Patients tab, and then scroll down to Resources. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to Plug Into Health with Prevea Health. To learn more and to submit ideas for future shows, please visit Prevea.com/podcast. And please remember, the information provided in this podcast does not constitute medical advice. It is not intended to replace interactions with your healthcare professional. And if you are concerned about your healthcare, you should consult with your healthcare professional. You can learn more about Prevea Health at Prevea.com. Thank you for choosing to plug into health with Prevea Health.